Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Jim Taylor, Chief Financial Officer at the U.S. Department of Labor. Also joining us from IBM is Steve Watson. So, Jim, strong stewardship of taxpayers' resources requires rigorous internal controls. Would you elaborate on your efforts to embed and mature an internal control model within your organization? What are some of the challenges you face in that area?
Yeah, well, internal controls is near and dear to my heart. What we wanted to do instead was come up with a management-based approach where management is looking at their internal controls and assessing them themselves, not a gotcha approach, and not something another requirement auditors had to do. And so we wanted to identify what are the weaknesses and how should management address the weaknesses and how can we improve things so that management would want to make those changes instead of, you know, the knee-jerk reaction is, well, the auditors don't understand. And it's, but if it's your own staff doing this, guided by people who maybe understand the process, you know, and assisted where necessary by contractors or subject matter experts, those are the things that I think are positive. So that's when we came up with that, that was the intent. At Labor, we're carrying out that effort. The Deputy Secretary has taken a personal interest in this because he realized how important the internal controls are. And it's not just in and of themselves they are, because they are, but it's also, everything is about perception. And so that's why you want clean opinions, and that's why you want good internal controls. What we're trying to do different in our internal controls is we wanted to make it useful. So we're taking a risk-based approach. We're focusing our efforts on those programs which really haven't looked at as much. To me, that's what we're doing. That's really interesting.
Jim, given the significant fiscal and economic pressures the country is facing, I understand the department has embarked on a department-wide cost-cutting effort. Would you tell us more about your efforts to cut costs and realize savings? What are some of the key initiatives being pursued within labor to achieve cost reductions?
Sure, I'd be happy to. I told my staff when I was given that assignment that they don't have to worry about overscheduling holiday parties this year, because no one's going to invite us anywhere, because we're the ones in charge of reducing all these costs and reviewing the conferences as well. So we're really proud of how far we've come. For us, travel is a huge thing. We have a lot of cars out there because a lot of our inspectors use vehicles. We have a lot of vehicles, and we took a hard look at those. We have a lot of travel. We looked at the travel and tried to figure out ways to combine the travel, what was really necessary. We looked at desktop devices and things like that to try to reduce. We even reduced $180,000 in awards, not by saying you're not going to get an award, but by saying, you know, some of the awards will be the paper award you hand out. But at the Secretary's awards ceremony, the highest honors weren't things we went out and paid a lot of money for. They were awards that were actually made at the Job Corps training centers. These really beautiful things were made as part of a training activity. It was a great way, it was a great symbiotic way to get these things done. And I was very impressed by that. So we've just in something like that, we saved $180,000. The goal is to reduce travel overall by 30% by the end of 2013. That's the stated goal that OMB has. And the beauty of this is that it's truly, and the way we can sell this in my job is that it's truly a way to look at how to re-engineer how you do business. What the president really wants us to do is take a look at how we do things. And this is an initiative to do that, because it's not cutting our budget, our travel budget, by 30%. What they're saying is take that money and apply it to increasing the benefits or increasing the program activities, doing something else other than traveling. And, you know, and with technology the way it is, you know, are there things that we can do to get around having to travel as much as we do? There are times you cannot. You know, there's no way you're going to remotely do a mine safety inspection. You know, you need to meet with those who are managing the pension benefits of an organization to understand a lot of what they're up to. But there's a lot of prep work you can do before you do that. And so, you know, we think that we have a lot of great activities on do the savings. And to answer your question, Steve, it's mainly in the travel area. And we have no qualms at all about meeting a 30% reduction by the end of this fiscal year over the 2010 number. And that's with more staff on board.
Jim, a successful CFO organization requires financial expertise in, I guess, IT, analytics. You've touched on that. Obviously, financial expertise, accounting, and I'm sure other diverse competencies as well. What are you doing to ensure you have a well-trained and technical workforce to meet your mission challenges, and how do you cultivate the next generation of leadership?
Well, that's a constant challenge, isn't it? Mm-hmm. And it's more challenging when you know that administrative costs are the first thing that are reduced and when you're trying to reduce deficits. And that's just the way life is. In our case, when I got there, we had about 100 people. We've hired 48 new staff in 2 years. These are new people. These aren't people I promoted internally. These are new people coming in with new skills because we couldn't match up our requirements with the skill sets we had on board. We had people to do some jobs very, very well, but the job had changed. Some of the jobs had changed, and we had new jobs we had to do. And one of the biggest failures of the implementation that we had with the new financial system was that the CFO's office just didn't have the bench, the resources to be able to support that activity and support the agencies. And you can't, some things you just can't do totally with contractors and outside entities. You've got to be able to have that workforce yourself. Retaining the talent, no matter how tough times get, my promise is that we will reward those who are doing an exceptional job. We'll find a way. If it's time off awards, I'll buy you lunch, I don't care, anything, you know. But, you know, we will find a way to reward this, and that's why I tell the staff, if you're coming to work and you're doing your job, you're going to get your salary. But if you're doing something that's really moving us forward, then you're going to get rewarded, and we'll always find a way to do that because that's the way you keep those folks. So those are the things that we're doing to get more talent in and to try to keep them.
Now, Jim, the next area I want to talk about reaches into the new folks that you're bringing on. But it also talks about some of the things we used to discuss. And it was a question I used to ask, and it was about the retirement tsunami, which back at 6 years ago, we were talking about it, but it's coming to fruition now. So with the new folks you have coming on board, and presumably the folks that are leaving, what are you doing around the area of knowledge management and institutional knowledge retention?
Well, I think we talked about a skills assessment in great detail before, but to be honest, that's one of the key things is making sure that throughout the department, and in my office in particular, that we have the skill sets required to do the functions that we're in right now, and to make sure that no matter what happens, that you've got the right levels of folks who are moving up, who have developed that skill set and are ready to take the next step forward. Because the people we're going to use are going to be usually the higher graded folks, and the folks that are taking a lot of knowledge with them, so we've got to constantly be replenishing that supply. It will be difficult. And like most folks who have been around a long time, you know, I got tired of hearing about the retirements. I just got tired of hearing about it. But you're right. It is here. And the numbers are incredible that OPM is reporting. And so, like everybody else, you know, I'm looking for qualified accountants, looking for qualified IT people. But, you know, I'm also looking for people that know how to think and know how to act independently and know how to analyze information. So I think that gives us a little bit of an edge that maybe because we're looking out for people that have some good general skills, you know, I'm not going to make them all CPAs. And they don't want me to, but I can use them in a lot of the functions we perform. So it is going to be difficult, I think. And I think by making these systems far more efficient, we have the ability to process things a lot more efficiently than we could before. You know, do we need the number of payment centers that we've had traditionally because we can now route a payment, you know, electronically? Doesn't matter where in the country it comes from. It's going to come by email. We're going to pay it electronically. It doesn't matter where you sit anymore. Those kind of things will help us reduce the number of people that have to have a particular skill. They still need to make sure they're working with the vendors at their local area in their office. However, do they have to understand the accounts payable process in order to make this happen? I want to make it easier on them so they don't have to be accounts payable experts in order to get an invoice, mm-hmm. you know, paid.
I want to switch gears a little bit and talk about financial reporting models. And there's been some discussion around revising it in the federal space. Can you discuss the existing challenges around financial reporting, and what are some of the initiatives that are being pursued to address some of these issues?
I absolutely love that question. You know, as a financial manager, I never thought they'd pass the CFO Act because it made too much sense and it took too much control away and put too much sunshine on the activity, which was the intent on internal controls and on financial activities in general. 20 years later, you know, we had the Improper Payments Elimination Recovery Act that required the CFOs and the IGs to get together and produce a report on where are we with the CFO Act and what needs to be done going forward. I was asked to lead that effort in conjunction with John Weimer, who's the IG at the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. And so we had the IGs, we had CFOs working together. We did a tremendous amount of outreach. It took us almost a year to get that report done. And we did outreach to the financial community. We had all the former controllers, except for maybe one, come in and talk about the CFO Act and their experience with it and what they thought about it. and what ought to be done. And you want to see an opinionated group, get them together. And it was fascinating. It was a lot of fun. And so we did outreach with the AGA's help. We did outreach to contract community, you know, the people who have been doing these audits and do the consulting, who actually know this stuff, and also to the financial community and to the IG community. So we went out to all these four communities. From that, this wasn't a formal evaluation or audit. This was a report based on, you know, based on what we heard from people and based on our impressions. We from academics as well. And so what we got from that was, you know, a lot of this has been tremendously successful, that we couldn't have done the things we do. We ought to be doing more in terms of having the CFO follow the same model that the CFO reports do. The CFO reports are based on a private sector model, but the CFO isn't yet. More and more, it's getting there. In a private sector, the CFO is the last stop out the door. You may have a great idea, you know, and the president of the company, I think, this is really good. Get the CFO in here. Let's talk about return on investment. Let's talk about what you're going to need to get this done. Let's see where it fits in to our earnings stream. And so that's the last stop before you go. We're not quite there. And I don't pretend that CFOs and federal government are going to be similar to exactly that. But when you talk about risk analysis, and when you talk about internal controls, and you talk about a partner with agencies, not just with the secretaries and deputy secretaries, but with the agencies themselves, there's more of that I think needs to be done. I think that when Treasury says we spend $8 billion a year on financial reporting and auditing, there ought to be something we can do there. As a CFO, I prepare a really great-looking annual financial statement. I can tell you on one hand how many people read that thing. Several of my staff, not all of them, several of my staff do, I do, and maybe one person on the Hill, but not even them. Yeah, and yourself? Okay, good, good. I'll send you one in a couple weeks. And it's useful. And again, there's credibility because they can audit it. And we have auditing standards. They're clear, understandable, you know, and you get a result and you get credibility. Or you can lose credibility. But, you know, you get it. But everybody's almost there now. I mean, DHS is getting close. Everybody else is there pretty much. DOD, got a ways to go. But everybody else in the civilian side is pretty much there. So why are we doing the same thing over and over again? Why are we doing the same report, getting them audited, and spending billions, not just on the financial audit, but on the reporting and the staff that's involved and all this? You know, we ought to take a look at this. And one of the key recommendations to Congress that we did in the CFO RAC report was that they ought to direct OMB and FASAB and GAO and everybody, Treasury, everybody. They ought to direct that everybody get together and start looking at this and look at, you know, is there a way we ought to evolve the model? You know, we don't need to throw the baby out with the bathwater, but we can declare victory because we have victory and look at what we need going forward. You know, we do tons of internal controls. You know, we can do it based around that. We already have internal controls opinion required going forward. So we can do it based on that. So there are things we can do and report on that make sense. When the recovery board looked at reporting, you know, they didn't use financial statements. You know, they got a lot of accolades, deservedly so, for the kind of reporting they set up. And, you know, USA spending and all that. And it was set up as well by OMB. So those things that are all set up, they don't use financial statements. That's a whole separate reporting thing that we're doing. So it makes sense to me that we look at what the real requirements are and not just say, no, stop, you know, we don't have to do anything. You know, the danger is you're always perceived as saying, well, you know, I want to change the way I have to report because I don't want to report anymore. That's not really the case. I think it ought to still be just as challenging, if not more so, but it ought to be more relevant to what we need to do.
What does the future hold for financial management at the U.S. Department of Labor? We will ask its CFO, Jim Taylor, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.